Mastery and coaching from five perspectives: an educator, an ethicist, an administrator, a researcher, and a coach. Panel discussion at the 2016 National Coaching Conference in Seattle, Washington. Serving in the role as the coach on the panel, Swin Nader.
Everybody's telling you, you've got to be continuously improving. What does that mean? What does that mean? And it's got to be something that you're not forcing yourself to do. It's got to be something that you can't help but do. It's got to be something that you are. John Wooden, when he was a young man, his father, who was a farmer, told him, never try to be better than someone else, but never cease trying to become the best you are capable of becoming. He took that and he thought about it. And then later he heard a poem by that ended like this: "For who can ask more of a man than giving all within his span? Giving all, it seems to me, is not so far from victory." George Moriarty, Major League umpire, who spelled his name with one I, which the player was one more than he had in his head. Right? So he got this message, and in John Wooden's bathroom, it was in Encino Condo, there was a little that someone embroidered that said, "I am me, I am the best me there is, I will always be a second best someone else." It's all about trying to become the best you can be, and somehow John Wooden got that in his mind and in his heart, and he went on a mission of trying to become the best that he could be in whatever it was. You know, he wanted to be he actually was going to be a civil engineer, but he couldn't finish his degree because he had to do summer work, and in the summer he had to help his dad, so he changed to English. Then he went, in his first job, he coached baseball and football and tennis, and was athletic director, and he coached basketball. And he always made it a point to become the best that he can be. He said, "Success is the peace of mind which is a direct result of the self-satisfaction in knowing you did the best, you made the effort to become the best of which you are capable." He really believed that and he lived it. And that's his secret. If you want to know a secret to John Wooden, is that he never stopped doing that. But it was very detailed and very planned and in a very organized fashion. It took one piece of the game at a time, every off season, and mastered it. The subject is mastery as a coach. I believe that no one's ever mastered coaching. I don't believe anyone's ever mastered coaching. I think we've had successful coaches. If we say success is the peace of mind, which is a direct result of self-satisfaction, you know, you've made the best, made the effort to become the best which you are capable. Yes. But is there anyone, if you ask the greatest coaches of all time, did they master coaching, what will they say? No. I'm still trying. You go for perfection and you realize you'll never reach it. That's where it's at. No one's ever gotten there. But the journey is so much fun. Right? Bobby Knight was my coach in Olympic trials. How many of you know who Bobby Knight is? Okay, you all know Bobby Knight. He's got a new furniture company now. Bobby Knight Furniture Company. The slogan is, buy a couch and we'll throw in a chair.
No.
Well, I spoke at the Nike clinic, the coaches clinic in Las Vegas recently, and Bobby Knight was right before me. And it was funny, he was introduced to Wendy and vice versa, but he was a great guy, and he's in his clinic now. You know, he's in his 70s, right? He says he's so excited about what he's teaching with. He said, "If I were to coach today, I'd do this. I didn't do it before, and dang it, I didn't know it, but now I would do this today." And it was like a passing little imaginary shooting drill. Still learning. And some would say he's a master. But he would never say that. Never stop learning. And it has to be an addiction. That's why they listen. And Wade, you said, you mentioned Coach Wooden, listen. "A wise old owl sat in an oak, The more he heard, the less he spoke. The less he spoke, the more he heard. Now, wasn't he a wise observer? The coach's job is never done. But let me tell you something. The greatest coach, men's basketball coach, NCAA, John Wooden, no question, right? Most successful. 10 championships in the last 12 years, 38 straight playoff wins. That may never be broken. He got to work about 9 o'clock. He had his plan for practice with his coaches. Went to lunch. Read the newspaper. Did the crossword. Had practice. And right after practice, he went home. We never looked at one film, ever. And film was available. It would have been reel to reel, you know, that kind of stuff. But we never looked at one. He never looked at one. He scouted some players around, you know, but mostly what he had done up at that point. See, by the time I got there, he'd already won a few championships, and he had already coached since 1948 at UCLA and, you know, back in the 30s, of course. So he'd coached a long time. But what he had done in all of that time was work on not reinventing the wheel. Work on cutting down time. Let's get this down, this down, this down, so we don't have to do this. And he was able to go home and forget about the game. Didn't talk about the game to his wife until the next day. Didn't meet with his assistants after practice. And he won championship after championship after championship at a very stressful. Now, high school might be tougher because you've got classes to teach, and, you know, he wasn't teaching class. And especially if you're teaching English, you know, you've got to grade papers and all that, math, you know. Easy. How was he able to do that? John Wooden had an R&D system that I'm going to recommend to you. I mentioned it before. Take one piece of the game and try to master it. Can we do that? How many of you have done that? Just one. Stick with one. You don't, right? You get two or three. Oh, I'm learning something here. You're here to learn a bunch of general things and some specifics. But are you diving into... How many soccer... Do we have soccer coaches? Soccer coaches? Yeah. Okay, the corner kick, right? Have you studied the corner kick until there's no more to be learned about it? Have you talked to the greatest corner kickers in the world? Have you noticed the angle, the curve of the ball, and where players should be? Have you noticed that? Have you written down that it's not the first kick that scores most of the time, it's the rebounder? And how do we do it? So if that's the case, then where do we put players? Have you mastered that part of the game? John Wooden, every offseason since 1948, took one part of the game of basketball. And he, first of all, he sent 6 questionnaires to the 6 best coaches in the country in that particular subject. Let's say it's rebounding. He asked them, called them, said, he didn't email because, you know, we didn't have that. He called them and said, can I send you a questionnaire? And if I give it to you, will you return it? They said yes. Then he read everything written on the subject. I'm not saying almost everything. Everything. And then he spoke to the experts. And if we were studying free throws, he happened to have a guy named Bill Sharman, who was with the Lakers in that area at that time, one of the greatest free throw shooters of all time. And he talked to him. When he learned how to coach a big guy one offseason before he had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he talked to Will Chamberlain and Bill Russell. But he read everything he could get his hands on, and he got all the questionnaires back. And at the end of the summer, he collected all of the data and drew his conclusions. For rebounding, there were only 3 things. And I've adopted them, and that's how I became a rebounder. I became. Assume every shot is missed, get in position, and go get the basket. As far as individual rebound. But there were out-of-bounds plays. There was the full-court press. There was breaking the press. There was half-court offense. There was half-court high-low offense when he got the big guys or the high posts. And he studied and he studied and he studied one at a time in a scientific fashion mastery. And once he got it, he didn't need to study it anymore. He learned a few more things, but rarely did it change anything because of his study. And when you do that, then you get all of these things done, and you start getting a very deep knowledge of the game of basketball. And I'm not saying that the subject should all be X's and O's. There's psychology things, you know, how do we motivate players? He said he learned how to motivate me because by taking notes on the guy that was there 10 years before me. And he said, I remember that he was a little bit like you. And so I went and looked at my notes and said, I found some tips and they work with you. And I'm going to talk a little bit in a second about the 3x5 card, but during practice, you always kept a 3x5 card, which actually the practice plan was written on. And he kept notes all through practice. You see him writing down notes about players, about things, drills being too long, change this, change that. And he would always then go back to his office and transfer those to the regular size paper that goes into a three-ring binder. And he had one three-ring binder for every season, and it contained every practice by number. So when we're going for practice 33, he referred to practice 33 last year and the year before, or as many as he wanted to go back. Do you see what I'm saying? Keep notes, study, keep all of it so you don't reinvent the wheel, and eventually it gets a lot easier. I coached for 9 years at the college level, and I remember that it was very difficult to know how I was doing. I'd have to wait till the next game to see how I was doing. And that game would tell me, oh, you know, we're losing. But may not. We may have gotten better. But how would I know on a regular basis how I'm doing? Isn't that important? Shouldn't how I'm doing not be dependent on the wins and losses so much as how I'm doing according to my plan? Where am I on my plan? Do we have a plan? John Wooden had, and when I coached, I did this, where I planned out the entire season, every single practice, what I would cover. I started with my goal for the season, you know, with goals like what kind of offense am I going to run? What kind of defense am I going to run? Am I going to full court press? That would add some more practice to the equation. Things like that. So you take every part of the, you take what it is you're going to look like at the end of the season. We're going to be able to do this and get the ball to these guys and we're going to score. And then you have man-to-man and zone and things like that to worry about. You put it all down. When do you put in the zone defense? When do you put in the zone offense? So once I got that down, and you know, it doesn't have to be perfect the first year. You can ask people and get yourself a template, something that you can put down, and go with it, right? And then create your practice plans 1 week at a time, right? Hopefully, well, the practice plan is actually planned the day before, but you know what you're going to do that week and for that. And also, by the way, your practice plan should be made in accordance with who you're going to play when. Right? If you're going to play a team that plays all zone, the first game of the season, you want to get that zone offense in there before, you know, you start that first game. So you have to do some research there. But once you get that down and get your practice plans down, then you know where you want to be. Did we get that done? Are we here? Are we there? And that's a good self-assessment plan. Okay? So everybody agree on that? And does everybody agree?
Yes.
Are you asleep? It's not easy to do, but once you do it 1 year and then you start revising it, right? Oh, well, you need a little bit earlier here or that, or we didn't do a good enough job. Just like John Wooden kept his 3x5 cards, notes during practice. And it isn't long until you got it down, right? And now things become easier. But there's also, and I'm glad you mentioned reflection because my wife Wendy, when she taught, used reflection all the time. And it was more in the classroom. Right now, I want everybody to pair up. You two pair up and look at each other. You two pair up. You two pair up. Everybody get a partner right now, really quick, fast. You got 2 seconds to do it, okay? I want you to tell that person, each of you tell the other, one thing that you learned today that you didn't know before that you're going to use from now on. Right now. You've got about 30 seconds to do it.
I learned to be more specific today and to not just look at it, which is ironic because you just said that, but I didn't take it from you just now. I didn't legitimately say that. So I learned that the whole is an important piece, but to not forget about the sum of the parts as well.
Yes. I learned just in being intentional about reflection for the players as well as the coaches.
So if we were going around the room, we would find a lot more things. Now, imagine doing that after a basketball practice, after a soccer practice, and where the players know that this is going to be asked of them. What will happen? First, your players will concentrate more on what they're learning because they may be asked to reflect. Second, your plan, your practice plan, will have to have a purpose. You will have to know exactly what you were teaching that day. It has to have one theme of why you were doing it, what you were doing, when you were doing it, all of that, right? It's going to make you a better teacher. It's going to make them better students. It's going to make a better program, and learning will improve. That's reflection. And that's another way to evaluate yourself. True? How you're doing. Because if we're getting answers like this, right, which is great, it wouldn't happen in a regular classroom because you'd actually be here for that purpose. But if I'm not getting the answers that I want, then I know they're not learning what I'm trying to teach, then it's like I haven't taught, you haven't taught until they learn. I've got to change my ways. And you can get that feedback every day. I want to finish with something that's not related to that, but it's a poem that I wrote. Someone asked me to read a poem today. When you look at it, it has to do with Dr. Jeffries too, what he's saying. Why are we in this? We're in this for the kids, aren't we? Aren't we? Don't we just love them? We just love them. We just love them. They're a crack-up. They are a crack-up. But you know they're young people. They're really adults, but they're just young right now. And we have to look at them that way, don't we? We can see them as little children, already as adults. It's called The Game of Life. It's a poem I wrote about a year ago. The Little League game was about to begin on a perfectly wonderful day. One team sprinted out with a spirited shout, for the boys were excited to play. As the coach saw the field with his players in place, a vision took over his sight. Each Little League lad grew the age of a dad, complete with the beard and the height. His pitcher, an artist, composed to create on a canvas of waiting and bare. His stroke on the ball made it spin and then fall as it curved and it carved through the air. His catcher, a general positioned in place, was leading the rest of the pack. On his signal and then sign, they joined to combine on a quick and successful attack. His shortstop, a surgeon with quickness and skill, when it seemed as though death cast her fate, on the double he caught what the grave almost got and threw lifelessness out at the plate. The outfield consisted of no lesser men, 3 statesmen with not one reproach. On third was a preacher, on second a teacher, and on first a Little League coach. As the vision grew fainter, the coach stopped and thought, the epiphany cut like a knife. Baseball was more than a game and a score. It was practice for the game of life. That's why we're here.